WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. President Trump has signed an executive order putting American investors at the head of TikTok.
With this executive order, you will be effectively bringing into effect the agreement that will save TikTok and ensure that it can operate safely and securely.
CBS's Kelly O'Grady.
This executive order is simply affirming that the framework of a deal that they have is legal, and that this satisfies the requirements under which Congress had initially banned the app. And we are expecting this executive order to extend the deadline of that ban 120 days.
A law required the China-based parent company to sever ties with TikTok or lose access to U.S. app stores. CBS's Aaron Navarro.
As far as how it impacts a trade deal between the U.S. and China, this seems to be one big item that's now been solved between the two countries, though we're waiting to see what China gets in return exactly.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Cammy McCormick.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shally Pittman, filling in for Melissa Kay. State lawmakers are introducing bills that would change Wisconsin elections, Savannah Tomei Olson reports.
Both Republicans and Democrats have their own proposals, but they introduce them together at a press conference, a rarity here in Wisconsin. Republican Representative Scott Krug from Nakusa presented the Republican plans. His bills include standardizing drop box rules, creating standard early voting hours, and new rules for election observers. One of the most notable among his plans, a bill to allow poll workers to begin processing absentee ballots on the Monday before Election Day. Most states allow that, but Wisconsin does not. A similar bill last year was blocked by Republicans in the state Senate.
This package that I'm looking to introduce this week does take into account a lot of the things that President Trump has said about elections. We need safety, we need security, we need to know who voters are, but we also want to make sure that, you know, we understand that we set the line in Wisconsin, that we have our own election system.
Meanwhile, Democrats' proposals largely focus on increasing voter education and accessibility. Under their plan, high schoolers would get voter registration forms and be allowed to pre-register before they turn 18. Their bills would increase accessibility training for poll workers and mandate that elected officials work a shift as a poll worker, so they understand the system. Representative Lee Snodgrass from Appleton.
I have seen time and time again my colleagues making false claims about election security or administration. And as I tell people, there's no better way of learning than doing.
Their plans would also increase protection for clerks, their staff, and poll workers. Krug has signed on as an author of three of the Democrats' bills. Lawmakers made it clear they don't agree on all of these proposals, but they want to work it out in committee like they're supposed to. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson, Civic Media News.
And for WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shally Pittman.
The Brewers return home. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers are back to host the Reds tomorrow night. They beat the Padres 3-1 to finish the regular season with the most wins on the road, 45. Jackson Chourio, though, just 1-for-4 at the plate. Pat Murphy.
He's had some not so good at bats where he leaves his zone and chases down, especially, or chases up. As young as he is, hopefully he learns it.
NFL, it's the Packers and the Cowboys in Dallas on Sunday night. I asked Micah Parsons if he's ever spoken to Cowboys owner Jerry Jones since being traded to Green Bay.
Nah, I mean, I never even heard from Jerry Jones himself when I even got traded. I found out through my agent. Like, I haven't talked to Jerry Jones since, like, what, OTAs?
Jones on The Fan in Dallas.
Jerry, do you think with the Micah deal that you let your money get mad and it just became a little bit too personal versus a football decision?
Absolutely not. Not at all. It was nothing personal. I told you I like Micah.
That's Cowboys owner Jerry Jones with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tons of sunshine on tap, not only for today, tomorrow, into the weekend, and even for next week, too. High temperatures today and tomorrow hit the mid-70s, then we flirt with 80 degrees for the weekend and next week. Unseasonably warm. Enjoy it. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 76.
Join Lou Rugani for the Music of the Stars every Sunday morning from 7 a.m. until noon. Lou brings back the nostalgia from the golden age of radio with the music, drama, and comedy shows that made radio magic. Music of the Stars is sponsored by Lakeland Care, providing personalized support that aims to improve quality of life and maintain independence for elders and those with disabilities. It's the Music of the Stars, Sunday at 7 on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously. The best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Jeopardy champ Ben Chan into the studio. He'll make the popcorn pick of the week. And Norm Kopesky from Appleton Cigar drops by to talk about his beard contest.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
I wouldn't get on this program with all of you fine folks every day and talk about how to do that through voting and through speaking out. I'm here with you every day.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
What are you doing as an elected official? You have no business in an elected office.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
Thank you for having me.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got a special episode of the Maggie Dawn Show. We are broadcasting live from the Hilltop Farm in Spring Green. This is the Reisinger family farm, where they, for over 100 years, have been raising animals and crops right here in the hills of Sauk County. I'm so excited because not only are we here live at their farm, it is the 49th anniversary of Jim and Jean Reisinger, and we're going to celebrate that with all of you today. I'm also going to be joined by Brian Reisinger, Jim and Jean's son, as well as their daughter, Malia, who's carrying on their proud family farming tradition. Brian Reisinger has written quite a book. I would recommend it to everyone who basically eats food. Yeah, so that would be everyone. This book is called Land Rich, Cash Poor. It was published in 2024 to great acclaim. Since then, it has been named the 2025 Book of the Year by the Farm Foundation, and it received a Reader's Favorite Book Award. C-SPAN picked it as one of its author's series. The Associated Press has covered it. It's an incredible encapsulation of what has gone on in agriculture, in farming in this country, for over 100 years. It is a microcosm told through the lens of the Reisinger family, but it is a story that affects us all to this day, and it speaks to some of the challenges that we are all facing in this country in this very moment. So with that, it is my very big privilege to welcome Jim Reisinger. Happy anniversary, sir, and Brian Reisinger. Thank you for letting us come to your farm today.
It's a pleasure to have you.
I'm so excited to be here. Brian, congratulations on the book. Yeah. We got introduced a few months back. It's so fun to be here on your family's farm. And again, congrats on the book. It is quite a powerful account that I think, again, every American should take a read on. I wanted to start this afternoon by asking you to read what I found to be one of the most powerful passages. You open the book with this. If you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of a read of your book, Land Rich, Cash Poor.
I'm happy to, and thank you for that. And I just got to say, what people are going to hear is what we really lived. And I owe it to my dad and my sister, my mom, excuse me, I get emotional thinking about it, my family being willing to tell this story and us being able to maybe pick our heads up from the work for just a little bit to share a farm story that a lot of farm families maybe would have shared, but they've been too busy trying to make a living.
Yes.
And so I'm happy to share.
Please, folks, this is the beginning of Brian's book, Chapter 1. Again, the book's title is Land Rich, Cash Poor. Here's Brian Reisinger giving us a reading, the author himself.
There are more tears on this land than we want to admit. My dad and I were on sacred ground, back at the small cabin I own on a 40-acre parcel behind the farmhouse where we both grew up. This land upon which my grandpa turned out milk cows to graze years ago, and my dad journeyed to bring them into the warm barn each morning. My dad's hands were big and calloused from decades of hard labor, his back still strong, but not as straight as it once was. We sat there on the porch in the sun, and the trees seemed to whisper of those things we'd lost. My father quietly broke into tears, like rain that starts suddenly while the sun is still shining, the earth feeling more than one thing at once. So, too, for our family, with it all had been taken from us and all we had yet to save. The wind blew the wild grass, and I thought of my father's fields beyond and how hard we'd fought to keep them. For our family, the story of the disappearing American farmer, a threat not only to those living it, but also to the life of our nation, began here on this land. This plot turned our family from dirt poor to middle class in one generation during the depths of the Depression, carried two more generations forward, and gave way to the generation of me and my sister and her kids, until the rest of the world shifted and left us behind. I thought of all that and everything we'd survived since, not only the pandemic, but also four recessions in my lifetime alone. Cows, milking cows through below zero weather, my dad in the hospital when I was a boy. Surely the resilience of the American farmer, paired with some new ideas and blessings from above or luck on the ground, could get us through.
Thanks so much, Brian. It's really powerful. You're describing this moment, a pivot point in your family's farming tradition of over 100 years where you sold off your dairy cows. And I just wanted to start, Jim, in that day, in that moment, that is a sea change, a shift. What were the feelings? I know for you, and as Brian described in the book, obviously sadness, but also was there some hope in passing the torch to your daughter and what this next generation might bring to this very hallowed land?
It was definitely quite a moment, really. Brian was in the barn with me. Malia was in the barn with me. And the cows did not want to go.
Yes.
I just stood back and let them do the work. And at the end, it's sad, you know, to see my life just done, you know, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for my daughter and son coming forward and saying, you got to do something different, Dad. We got to change this freestall into custom raising heifers.
Mm.
And that's what we're doing now. We're custom raising heifers for a different dairy farmer. We're still making money, you know. Otherwise, we would be lost, in a sense.
Jim, I just want to say, and to you, Brian, and your entire family, thank you so much for sharing your story here today and through the book. It is very rare that I think many of us see our life's work in a physical embodiment, and we, very few of us actually can see in reality, in a physical way, when our life's work pivots and changes.
Definitely.
And you showed such courage and strength. One of the things that I've said about Wisconsinites is we are very proud about tradition and we are a little bit hesitant to change. So
definitely. I don't want to change, but I've got to.
I want to honor that. And sir, I just want to express my deep respect for that and your faith in your daughter, who we'll talk to a little bit later,
yes,
to continue this on. I think that takes an incredible person and an incredible family to come together for that. Brian, in writing this and in talking with so many members of your family, what was that like? The moment itself is challenging and it's so emotional. We relive it here together again. What was it like, the process of writing this incredible family history?
Well, it really began with the family stories, you know. I mean, I grew up hearing bits and pieces, you know, a great uncle who lost his leg in the fields and, you know, grandpa, there was a fire at the house when he was a kid and, you know, mom and dad had a drought the year they were married and somehow mom still married dad.
Yes.
You know?
And I give her credit for that.
And we're all glad she did. But, you know, you hear these bits and pieces. And growing up working with my dad in the farmyard, I knew that farms were disappearing because it was happening right down the road. There used to be half dozen farms, you know, just around this vicinity, and now there's two. And
there's only one.
Yeah,
on this road.
Yeah,
anyway.
That's right. Mm. And you know, so I knew that things were changing and disappearing. What I didn't know was why. And when I decided to write this book and weave our family's honest story with the hidden forces that were making farms disappear, I found that it was a very rewarding experience, but also one that kind of shocked me because talking with three generations of my family, my great-grandparents had passed before I was born, but we talked to every other generation and other people who were around to reconstruct all this. The things I learned about the resilience of my family generations before I was born and my parents' story and everything else, and the ways that that connected with what it seemed like was happening with farms and our economy all across the country, it just kind of shocked me, you know? And I write in the early morning when only the farmers are up and when my head is clear. And there were a lot of mornings of laughter and there were a lot of moments of tears. And if people had been sitting outside while I was writing, they probably would have thought I was losing my mind in there.
I think some of our listeners think I'm losing my mind. I choke up and have moments on the air all the time with folks listening. I think, again, the idea of trying to record the history of the American farmer, and Brian, you and I have talked about this on this program before, but even before we were getting on, that you actually, farmers have to take a break to tell their story, and there's so much that has not been told about the farmer's story. Jim, I wanted to just ask you, you've obviously read your son's work.
Yes.
What was it like revisiting for you, for example, Alice and Teresa's story, and the fact that he came here with just a few shekels in his pocket, $25, and the story of their meeting, and revisiting your family's history from your son's words. What has that experience been like for you, sir?
It's just been, for him writing that book is just outstanding because he did all the history of it through my aunts and uncles, and being where the farm was down in a hole. And when it's down in a hole, there's nothing down there really except spring water.
And Jim, tell the listeners a little bit where we are. You call it the Hilltop Farm, but when Alice came here, the preference often was for flat farmland, and he picked this place and it led to dairy farm. Tell us a little bit about that.
He picked that place because he was hiding from the Germans in Germany, and it's very steep and just hidden, but it had spring water, which they needed, and it had a big garden, what they put all a lot of potatoes and lettuce, all the crops for, you know. And they worked that land. They cleared the trees and everything, and they made a lot of pasture for the cows. They only had, 15 cows. That's all he had. And they had the pigs and the chickens. But it's just astonishing that they still lived and still got going.
The rough and tumble world, you describe your great-grandfather, Alice, coming to the United States, Brian.
Yes.
And he had been effectively under contract to return to Germany if the first, what we now refer to as the First World War, got started. So there was this family oral history of, was he hiding out here? Did he just end up picking this because it was available land? I found that absolutely captivating. Yeah. Jim, you look like you want to get in on that. So what were you going to say, sir?
No, he found that land down there, and he just wanted to be hidden, period.
Well, and you described, Brian, that he spent some time alone.
Yeah.
And there is this deep sense that I got in the beginning of your book about your grandfather's commit, I'm going to make this work.
Yeah.
This is difficult. It's not the ideal land. I've got to maybe hide. I'm not sure. He spends some time alone, and then he finds Teresa, and they begin their life together. This goes back into the basically early 1900s, and you begin to describe how they build this legacy. Brian, just very briefly, when you look that far back into your family's past, and we got about a minute here, what does that mean for you and Malia and your kids now, the new fifth generation?
I just think about what a proud tradition it is,
yes,
and the resilience, you know, to have a man come across an ocean, trying to, what he was trying to do is avoid fighting in World War One for Germany. He wanted to be in America, and he dug a living out of the dirt. And for our family to be standing today after starting there, it's just such a source of hope, I think.
Yes, a source of hope for all of us. It is truly an American story. We're going to continue to learn about the past and the present and the future of the Reisinger family here at Hilltop Farm in Spring Green. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. We got a special edition of the show all about the proud tradition of family farms here in Wisconsin and America.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids Home for Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
It's time for another edition of the Fall Time Quiz. Okay, what's the most important thing to do for your home in the fall? A, clean the gutters. B, rake the leaves. Or C, get your septic and holding tank pumped.
Well, my wife wants me to do all three, but I'll go with getting the holding tank pumped.
That's right! And for the big prize, who should you call?
Gronk and Septics. Their trucks smell like cherry pie.
Right again! Just call 715-712-3456, and Gronk and Septic can take care of it for you. Now go do those gutters.
Gronk and Septic serves you near or far. Holding tanks and septics pump right there in your yard. They got porta potties ready for you, too. They'll pump away that stinky, nasty poo. Crockett Septic, be there in a jiff. Crockett Septic, no more nasty whiff. Crockett Septic, they won't make you cry. Their pumper truck smells just like cherry pie.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We're taking a little bit of a detour this week on the Recombobulation Minute so I can tell you about a brand new project we've been working on here at Civic Media that we're really, really excited about. So here at the Civic Media Network, we produce a tremendous amount of content on any given day. From our news team all over the state to our daily lineup of political talk and commentary shows to our many podcasts and weekend shows to local morning shows to all kinds of digital content, there can be a lot to keep up with. But now we're bringing you a new way to find all of this tremendous content all in one place. It's a new email newsletter called Civic Media Today. Like the Recombobulation Area, it also publishes on Substack. This is going to be your one-stop shop to connect with everything across the Civic Media extended universe, from podcasts and live streams of your favorite shows to the latest on everything happening across Wisconsin. So go subscribe to Civic Media Today.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Teachers are diverse, skilled leaders, innovating to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Teaching shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's a special edition of The Maggie Dawn Show. We're here on the Hilltop Farm in Spring Green, Wisconsin, with the Reisinger family. They have been farming this land, both agricultural products and livestock, for over 100 years. It's an especially wonderful day. Not only is the sun shining, it's a balmy 80 degrees. It is also the 49th wedding anniversary of the matriarch and patriarch of this family farm, Gene and Jim Reisinger. Again, to Gene and Jim, happy anniversary. Gene has now joined us with their son, Brian, who wrote the book Land Rich, Cash Poor, about your family's shared tradition and history and legacy here on this very land that we sit on today. Happy anniversary, Gene. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. We're enjoying it.
I am too. It's such a privilege to be here. Let's just get to know Jim and Gene a little bit. I heard that you all met on a blind date.
That's correct.
Tell us a little bit about this. And I also heard that you maybe wouldn't have been interested in Jim, Gene, if you would have known he was a farmer. But there was a little spark there on that first blind date. Gene, tell us, what about this man that you've spent these amazing 49 years with drew you in on that very first date?
Well, the very first date we went on was a planned blind date, and I didn't know what I was getting into. I just asked his height. That was important since I'm 6 foot tall and he was 6 foot tall.
Gene, I knew I liked you immediately when we met, as I am also 6 feet tall.
Yeah. So as the date progressed, within 35, 40 minutes, he told me he would be a farmer the rest of his life, as long as he had the ability to farm. Mm. And whoever would marry him would need to farm. And I was totally taken back because this was a first date, and I thought that was just, this is going to end soon. It'll be over.
Well, it's been 49 years, Gene. How is that prediction bearing out here?
Yeah. And 6 dates later, we got engaged.
Oh, my goodness.
So there you go.
Well, again, my most heartfelt congratulations to you both. You both have lived through quite a changing period of time for the family farm in the United States here, and frankly, globally, a lot of consolidation that we've seen. Jim, you were describing in our last segment how there used to be other family farms in this very valley here in Spring Green. Now there's only one remaining on the road I drove in on. What has it been like for you as the head of the family, in partnership with Gene, also as the head of the family, to see all of these changes, and for your marriage and your family to evolve right along with the evolution of farming in the United States? Gene, I'm going to start with you and then we'll go to you, Jim. What has it been like? Do you feel like your family is evolving and reflective of the changes in farming in the United States over your near 50 years together?
I think our family has been very diversified. They've learned what it's like. They've been resilient. They've been able to get through some times that we've had to have bad times till we got to the good times. Yeah. And they've been very understanding. Mm. They've also learned to appreciate what they have.
It takes a family to run a farm like this. Everybody's got to pitch in, Jim. You learned that at the elbow of your dad, Albert, growing up. When you now are looking with Gene to pass the torch to your daughter, Malia, whom we'll talk to a little bit later, did you, when you were a young man and met Gene, ever imagine that it might be your daughter that would carry on the family tradition?
Not at all. She is a special lady, I'll tell you that. Take on this work. You know, also Brian was there also helping.
Yeah.
Because when we, before that, I got really sick and Brian was there to help me do all the farm work. He got up early in the morning and to milk the cows and feed the cows. Now Malia's doing the same thing. You know, she's really digging in. So,
Gina, I was wondering if you could just share with our listeners a bit, when you had both kids and the farm was active, tell me what an average day for Gene Rensinger was back a few decades here with the two little kids and the farm to run. When did you generally get up in the morning, Gene?
Well, I get up about 3 o'clock, clean my house, wash my floor, went out to the barn, and got to work and helped to do what I needed to do.
What were the typical tasks? We know you got to get the cows milked at least twice a day, mornings and afternoons. What else comprised your farm work in an average day, Gene?
Well, I helped milk cows. I helped feed calves. I helped chop, bale, mow. For 25 years, I did all the tractor driving that I could do to help. I had my favorite things I did and things I didn't like.
This is what I want to know. What was your favorite task on the farm?
Oh, I love chopping hay. I love mowing hay. And I love driving the baler.
Oh, that does sound like good fun.
And I hated fencing. Absolutely. I never learned how to do it. I wasn't capable.
Does anybody really like it? I mean, I don't.
No.
That is just backbreaking, unfun work. And yeah. I've only tried to put a post in once, and I was like, oh, I thought I would have an angle on it since I was 6 feet. No such luck.
No.
I literally feel your pain. Jim, did you have a favorite task on the farm?
Milking the cows. Because he was there just seeing the milk come into the bulk tank and things like that. Even on the last day we sold our cows, the bulk tank was plumb full.
Amazing.
They poured out all their love. Yes, they did.
As someone who spent the greatest majority of my life as a paper pusher, the opportunities that I've had to see the metaphoric bucket of milk when I actually have done real work and you can see the fruits of your labor. It's really special. So thank you so much for sharing a bit of your lives with us. Brian, we're going to have you come back in a little bit. We're going to talk about the changing economy of farming. We're going to talk about the future of the Reisinger Farm. Next up, we're going to be joined by Christy Updike of the Farmer Angel Network. We'll discuss the challenges that are facing farmers, some of the mental health challenges, and the resources that are here in Wisconsin to help out family farmers just like Gene, Jim, Malia, and Brian. My big, big thanks to their family for having us here. Stay tuned. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home for the Todd Allball Show, weekday afternoons from 2 to 4.
For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shali Pittman, filling in for Melissa Kay. The end of September means it's time for the 52nd Cranberry Festival in Warrens. The Cranfest kicks off tomorrow and runs through the weekend, rain or shine. Grant Holly is executive director of the Wisconsin State Cranberry Growers Association, an industry org that turns 138 this year. Holly tells Civic Media the festival happens just ahead of the traditional time for cranberry harvest, but hybrids have loosened when the harvest can happen.
So we have these hybrids now, and we have hybrids that will start producing their berries that are ready to be harvested right around the second week of September. And then we have hybrids that will delay so that we can go almost all the way to hunting season.
This year's harvest is still different.
We are moving a little bit faster this year than we have before. This warm weather during harvest is kind of unheard of, and we're learning how to deal with it. But one of the pieces that it has done is we have growers that are out there for 14, 16 hours a day bringing in their berries, because we need to bring them in now.
The Cranberry Festival runs Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m., rain or shine. And Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Matt Zacher is putting the spotlight on our aging roads. He and community leaders say roads need a more sustainable funding solution. They argue that while the budget has some gains for roads, its structure pits funding against each other and favors temporary fixes over solutions. It's part of the Revitalize campaign led by the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and the Transportation Development Association. They're headed to other communities for the same campaign. For WIRI and WFHR News, I'm Shali Pittman. More news anytime at WIRI.FM and WFHR.com.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. There will be some new characters in the second installment of the Wicked feature film franchise. The Wicked 2, more specifically, Wicked for Good trailer, just dropped, and it features Dorothy, the Scarecrow, and Tin Man. Universal says this is the final trailer before the film's release November 21st of this year. Wicked for Good is a follow-up to 2024's Oscar-nominated Wicked. If you're looking for a new sports documentary, you're in luck. Clemente is the story of one of the best baseball players ever, whose career and life ended way too soon. It is now available for streaming on the History Channel and explores baseball great Roberto Clemente's life on and off the field, from his early struggles to becoming one of the best players in the game, as well as one of the most beloved. Clemente died in a plane crash in 1972 while delivering aid to Nicaragua. The film is executive produced by basketball great LeBron James and film directing great Richard Linklater. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
97.5 WFHR, locally grown radio, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
Tons of sunshine on tap, not only for today, tomorrow, into the weekend, and even for next week, too. High temperatures today and tomorrow hit the mid-70s, then we flirt with 80 degrees for the weekend and next week. Unseasonably warm. Enjoy it. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 73 degrees at our studios.
This message is for Karina, our mom who finished her high school diploma at age 28. Hi, Mom. It's Amethyst and Nicholas.
Congratulations on getting your diploma.
You worked so hard and have taught us so much.
We love you.
When you graduate, they graduate. Finish your high school diploma for you and for them. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free and supportive adult education centers near you.
brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
From the comments of former head coach of Wisconsin, Barry Alvarez, to the Brewers heading into the playoffs, there's a lot going on in Wisconsin sports. We'll discuss it with former Badger and NFL veteran Brady Ewing next time.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
Hello, everybody. Welcome and welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's an incredibly special episode of The Maggie Dawn Show. We're here at Hilltop Farm in Spring Green, Wisconsin, where the Reisinger family has raised animals and crops in Sauk County for over 100 years. Such a pleasure. In the first half hour, we were joined by Jim and Jean Reisinger, the matriarch and patriarch of this family farm. It's their 49th anniversary, so we're celebrating with them, which is amazing. We were also joined by Brian Reisinger, author of Land Rich and Cash Poor, about his family's farming journey and tradition. Now we're joined by three women from the Farmer Angel Network. We've got Dorothy Harms, Christy Updike, and Brenda Stotts. Dorothy and Brenda are co-founders of the Farmer Angel Network. And Brenda, I wanted to start with you. Tell me a little bit about why you decided to start the Farmer Angel Network and what your organization aims to do.
Our farm, we sold our cows in 2017. My husband and I had raised three kids on our farm. We farmed just south of Loganville. And he had suffered from depression and things just with the economy, everything going on, escalated some. So I got him back into counseling and tried to get him into a better place. Well, he decided after I had my knee replacement 2 weeks out, he comes in and says, the cows are going. I can't do this myself anymore, even though our kids were there. But depression will do that. You cannot see beyond just normal life. And so he struggled for a whole year in and out of hospitals and stuff. And then he took his life in October 8th, coming up will be 7 years ago. And so from that, we started the Farmer Angel Network, offering resources, because when I was navigating this for my husband, we didn't know where to go, where to look, who to ask for help, what to even do. Because you're out in the middle of nowhere out here in the rural communities. There's not a lot of mental health support out here. He had to go to Madison, which is over an hour away, for treatment. And that gets very challenging, especially when you have a farm to run. You just can't leave, and which I spent a lot of time back and forth. So we started the Farmer Angel Network to offer resources to bring them to the forefront. So when people need something, it's there. And we speak about it a lot to a lot of different organizations. And we have helped many people that have reached out to us and saying, thank goodness we are here. It's helped. It made it so much easier for them to find support and to at least know they're not alone, because that is what we strive. The biggest is that people need to understand you are not alone. There is somebody out here willing to listen and sit with you. And we don't know all the answers, but we're there and we will help you as the best we can.
Thank you so much for sharing your family's story. And I'm just personally, I'm so sorry for your family's loss, but also a wellspring of thanks as a native Wisconsinite and coming from a family of farmers, especially on my mother's side. Thank you for what you're doing to help support farmers in this state. I hope it is a model that can be replicated in other states, because I think those pressures are not unique to Wisconsin farms. It's happening throughout the Midwest, especially the upper Midwest. Dorothy, you co-founded the Farmer Angel Network with Brenda Stotz. And before I ask another question, let me tell everybody out there, you can find the Farmer Angel Network at www.farmerangelnetwork.com. They have a resource button there. And again, the suicide hotline, 988. You can also text hello to 741-741. With that, again, all of these resources will be in our show notes from this episode, and you can find it at civicmedia.us/shows. Dorothy, why did you feel inspired to join Brenda in founding the Farmer Angel Network?
Well, at that time, my husband Don and I, again, longtime dairy farmers, Don, fourth generation on his family farm, were going through our own transition, and we're getting to, you know, about ready to sell our cows. And I was very concerned about my husband's mental well-being. Being a dairy farmer was his identity. Mm. And who would he be after we sold the dairy cows? And so I went to one of those first meetings to just to get information, to see, you know, where we could get help. And really felt drawn in that this is something that I was became very passionate about, and it's something that needed to be, like Brenda said, brought out to the forefront. And so have continued to work with Farmer Angel Network. I think one of the unique things about what we do is it's a collaboration of agencies. So, you know, we're county public health, UW Extension, local healthcare facilities. But the main thing is that farmers are at the forefront of helping give the direction, helping to spread the message and be the voice for the work that we do. And I think gives validation to it for other farmers so that they can, like, believe in what it is that we're doing, that it's real.
You touched on something that's so important, Dorothy, and that's, you know, when people are going through hard times, I don't really want to have somebody that I don't know or hasn't been through the experiences that I have tell me what I should be doing. I want to talk to somebody that I know that has walked in my shoes or walked the path that I'm on. And the idea that the Farmer Angel Network not only brings in those outside resources, but it connects farmers and farmers' families to other farmers and farmer families. So critical.
It is. You know, our farming community, you know, as the Reisinger said earlier, is that, you know, there are less and less farmers, and that community becomes smaller and smaller. And the things that were, you know, that brought community together seem to be kind of going by the wayside. So one of the focuses in our efforts is providing events for families to get together, to come out off the farm and have fun together. And oh, by the way, we've got some information for you about mental health, you know. Mm. Just we kind of use that soft approach, and so that, you know, it's something that brings people out. We want to celebrate farming. We want to show farmers that we appreciate them.
Absolutely. Having some fun together and being in community is so important. And as a softer on-ramp to get folks those resources. Christy, what brought you to get involved with the Farmer Angel Network?
Also the personal stories and being in and around farming for my entire life. My daughter now is trying to find her way in farming and supporting her in that journey. And we've lost too many people to suicide in our lives. So wanting to support those around me and knowing the resources available. So I also represent Sauk Prairie Healthcare at the table and being able to connect the network with the resources that are available out there.
Because there are resources. One of the great things, you know, Brenda, you were talking about the fact that there was such a long travel time. One, you know, COVID was so hard on so many, and especially farmers, right? One good thing that came out of that was the advent of much more virtual therapy options mm-hmm. for people. So thank goodness for that. Brenda, let me ask you this. What do you think are some of the more common mental health challenges that face farming communities? You mentioned depression. And one of the things that occurs to me is that when you're struggling with depression and it's coupled with economic pressures and the sense of duty to your family, it can be just so overwhelming. Is that what you're seeing from other farming families, a similar story to your own? Or is it a more diverse set of mental health challenges? Tell me a little bit about what you see from talking to farmers in the Farmer Angel Network.
When you meet with some families, farmers are very isolated. They're very independent. They've got the I can fix it myself attitude. They don't like to ask for help unless they're at their last end or that it's forced on them. And they're very proud of what they do and what they can accomplish on their own. And sometimes when you have to step inside their world and say, I'm here, I understand, let's sit and talk. And they will, like I tell, we do safe talk training is one of the things that we offer to the communities. And we had talked to these all professionals. And I told him, I said, when a farmer finally decides to go to the doctor, you better listen because they're coming one time. And if they don't get what they want and you don't understand, they won't be coming back. They'll try and just figure it out on their own. So I said, take the time because so many office calls anymore are timed out. Yeah. And I said, it's going to take you at least 10, 15 minutes before they're going to warm up and earn your trust.
Yes.
They're going to talk about their dog, about the weather, about everything else, but why they're there. So I said, you're going to have to give them a little time to understand that they're here. It's hard for them to open up, but it takes a little bit for them to earn the trust that they know that they can trust you and that you're going to understand what they're going through. And that is one thing that we have worked with the Department of Agriculture. When they started telehealth, a lot of them, there was a few farmers that called in and they said, this person doesn't understand a bit. Yes. They don't understand farming.
Yes.
Well, now they have more people on staff now that have a farming background or do something in farming so that at least they can understand. Because if you do not have a farming background, it's very hard to understand the hours. Well, why don't you just not do it that day? Well, it has to be done that day. The weather, you have so many things against you, and people who do not understand farming, it's very hard for them to comprehend what their stress level is.
That was my very next question, Brenda, and I'll turn to you, Dorothy, is talking about sort of clinician competency, right, when they're actually talking to people. And we were talking, ladies, a little bit before we got on air about the fact that mental health and asking for help has had such stigma, and the very nature of farming can be isolating, and that clinicians have to know who the people are that are coming to them and try to meet them where they're at. I know the Farmer Angel Network has done a lot to try to improve that. Brenda was speaking to a bit of it. Do you think we have a sufficient amount of clinicians and therapists that understand the challenges and the culture around family farming and farmers in Wisconsin to meet these mental health needs?
It's growing, but I think we're still far short of that. And I think, like Brenda said, oftentimes just getting that access, I can speak personally right now. My husband is working with a therapist, and the one that he's working with is an hour and a half away. She'd like to refer him to somebody here close by, and we've been told it's at least a 3-month wait for an appointment. So, there's just more that needs to be done. And I know the Department of Ag, the Wisconsin Farm Center has provided training for clinicians to kind of help give them to understand the culture. Mm-hmm. The agrarian imperative is what they call it. Yep. About why the
that
land.
That sounds fancy, the agrarian imperative.
But it means that the land is important above all else.
That makes sense. Why don't we just say that, though? You know what I'm saying? The land is important above all else. Folks, if you're just joining us, my name's Maggie Dawn. We've got a special episode today. I'm joined by three women that work with the Farmer Angel Network, two of their founders, Brenda Stotz, as well as Dorothy Harms and Christy Updike. We're talking about the mental health challenges facing the farming community in Wisconsin and beyond and some of the resources that are available. We're going to talk about those resources, where you can find them, and share a little bit more of these ladies' stories when we come back. My name is Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
A game without a crowd is just a scrimmage. A performance without an audience is just a rehearsal. Without your presence, high school sports and the performing arts aren't possible. Ensure that these essential extracurricular activities continue to enrich the lives of students in Wisconsin. Purchase a ticket to your local high school's game or performance.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Get ready to go for the green and gold on this local Civic Media radio station. Listen each weekday for the keywords to text for your chance to win our daily prize, $200 cash and gold jewelry. And be entered to win our grand prize, two indoor club level seats to see the green and gold take on Minnesota in Green Bay. Just download our free Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 9, 11, 1, 3, 5, and 7 for your chance to win in our multi-state contest. For complete rules, go to civicmedia.us.
We want to thank our listeners for following the rapid support over to the podcast world. Your growing support for the show and your favorite guests, area nonprofits, is greatly appreciated.
We love getting the word out about the great things nonprofits do for the community. Special thanks to Crockett Septic for sponsoring this show as they continue to help us bring you great conversations.
Listen to the rapid support at WFHR.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, my name is Chuck Collins. I'm the great-grandson of the meatpacker Oscar Mayer and a member of the Patriotic Millionaires. I'm also the author of a new book, Burned by Billionaires, How Concentrated Wealth and Power Are Ruining Our Lives and Planet. This summer proved to all of us that climate change is real and it is deadly. And I'm here to tell you that a small group of billionaires are making it worse. Did you know that billionaire Jeff Bezos' wife, Lauren Sanchez, emitted more carbon in her 11-minute Blue Origin space flight than the average person emits in a lifetime? Did you know that the average super yacht produces as much carbon emissions as 1,500 regular vehicles? And that private jets emit 10 to 20 times more pollutants per passenger than commercial airplanes? So who should pay for climate change? People like you who recycle and turn off the lights when you leave the room, or billionaires who take joyrides in space? Tax the rich, tax the rich, tax the rich. I'm Chuck Collins. I'm a patriotic millionaire, and I approve this message.
You wanted to be cool, which led you to smoking, which led to a pack a day. Then you met that special someone, which led to starting a life with them, which led to wanting to live longer, which led to quitting. Then you heard you may be at risk for lung cancer, which led you to getting a low-dose CT scan. If you smoked, get scanned. Talk to your doctor and learn more at savedbythescan.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We've got an incredibly special episode for you all today, and I'm so humbled to be here at the Hilltop Farm in Spring Green, where the Reisinger family has farmed both crops and raised animals for over 100 years. We're here celebrating with the Reisingers because it is Jim and Jean's 49th wedding anniversary. We're talking about the changes to the farming industry that we've seen here in the United States and beyond. Right now, we've got a set of three incredible ladies. They're all associated with the Farmer Angel Network, an organization founded by Brenda Stotz and Dorothy Harms to help support the mental health of farmers in Wisconsin and beyond. It is not an exaggeration to say that farmers in Wisconsin have been under incredible both economic and therefore mental strain. The Farmer Angel Network is helping to provide resources to address that at an absolutely critical times. So thank you all, ladies, for being here with me. And of course, thanks again to the Reisingers for hosting us here. Let me start with you, Dorothy. Tell us a little bit about the specific resources and programming that is available to farmers and their families through the Farmer Angel Network. And again, folks, you can find that at farmerangelnetwork.com.
Well, while many of our network members are trained in QPR skills, so QPR is question, persuade, refer, and safe talk. So reaching out to us is kind of, you know, can be an initial stop. But one of our really strong partners is the Wisconsin Farm Center. And we work very closely, especially with Karen Endres there. They have a 24/7 hotline that there is a live person answering that phone call. And when somebody needs to talk to somebody about, you know, whether it's, you know, they're having suicidal thoughts or whether it's just, I just need to kind of unload on somebody. Mm-hmm. And they have access to getting telehealth appointments within that following week so that they can get some help, you know, immediate help to them.
Immediately. That's so important when people are struggling with depression or suicidal thought to get that help and resource to folks right away. They can find that number at the Farmer Angel Network website.
They can, yes. Yeah.
And again, that's farmerangelnetwork.com. Of course, there's the National Suicide Hotline at 988, or you can text hello to 741-741. Here's the number specifically from the Farmer Angel Network. Their 24/7 Farmer Wellness Helpline is 888-901-2558. Again, that's 888-901-2558. All of these resources will be in our show notes following the conclusion of our program today. Christy, let me ask you, what do you think the role of education, just being here today and talking about this out in the open, sharing these resources, bringing it out of the dark into the light, both literally and metaphorically, what role does education play in addressing the mental health challenges facing our farming communities today?
It's huge. So we talk about the hard stuff, and people can talk to us, and we'll work through their challenges with them. So that farmer to farmer peer support and connecting them to the right resources. We are not therapists. We're not clinicians. We are folks at the ground, boots on the ground. We've had experience, lived experience. We can share our own personal stories of what we've gone through and connect folks. So those we have worked with have literally told us, "You saved my life." By hearing somebody else say, "I've been there," and they realize that somebody else has had that thought or gone through that experience, they're willing to reach out and ask for help and connect to others.
Listening and being open and letting people feel heard is the first step. Thank you, ladies, for saving people's lives here and for starting this organization. Brenda, let me ask you, what signs or symptoms should families and communities really be on the lookout for if they think someone's struggling with mental health issues?
There's quite a few that I didn't recognize either. The month after my husband died, there was a magazine article that came out. It was a farm magazine called The Furrow, and it had all the listings of telltale signs, and one was neglecting your animals. My husband was meticulous, and that, and I look back now, he just was selling cows. He was doing things that weren't right. Not maintaining your machinery or your buildings, not being able to go out or wanting to go out if you're a social person. My husband used to talk on the phone all the time, and he regressed from that even. They lose connection with the outside world. They just draw inside. Or they can get the other way where they're very aggressive and just don't want to talk about it. They push you off, the other thing is that you look for is they want you to make the decisions, where he always was strong in making decisions, even taking over the checkbook because he didn't trust himself enough to do it anymore because he loved numbers and he was very, you know, meticulous with that. And that was all signs that I never saw as red flags going through it. But after he passed away and you're reading all this stuff, and it's like he hit every one of them. And so you look back, so now that's why we do what we do, is to make people more aware that there is stuff going on out here and pay attention.
When the folks you love seem to not take any joy and pride in the things that always brought them joy and pride, pay attention, ask, refer them to the Farmer Angel Network. Again, it is farmerangelnetwork.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please give your elected officials a call. Let them know that our farmers need mental health resources. We can and should do better. It is a matter of health and wellness for all of us. If our farmers are hurting, all of our families are hurting. So please pay attention, reach out, get some help. Thank you, ladies, for everything you do for Wisconsin. When we come back, I'm going to be joined by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Brian Reisinger will be joining us again. And we got the statewide text to win contest. Stay with us.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. President Trump has signed an executive order keeping TikTok in business in this country.
I had a very good talk with President Xi. I had a lot of respect for him. Hopefully he has a lot of respect for me too. And we talked about TikTok and other things, but we talked about TikTok and he gave us the go ahead.
The agreement will put TikTok under U.S. investors, Vice President J.D. Vance.
It does protect Americans' data security. It ensures TikTok is still accessible. And on this question of the algorithm, which we've heard this a lot, what this deal ensures is that the American entity and the American investors will actually control the algorithm. We don't want this used as a propaganda tool by any foreign government.
CBS's Aaron Navarro.
It'll have American tech company Oracle be the ones to host Americans' user data from TikTok.
Congress passed a law requiring TikTok split from its China-based parent company because of national security concerns. CBS News Special Report. I'm Cammie McCormick.